Good morning to everybody. It's nice to have all of you here, and thank you all for coming. Okay. Originally, I was planning on giving a shiur on the topic of Kiddushim to you this week, as this week is the double parasha of Acharei Mot and Kiddushim. And indeed, I started preparing my shiur yesterday morning. I was about halfway into the preparation, and then I said to myself, but since I only present here on Mondays, if we tackle the topic of Kiddushim Tihiyu and all of its ramifications, then we're missing an opportunity. You won't be, but I would be missing an opportunity to discuss Eretz Yisrael, being that this week is the week of Yom HaZikaron, of course, and Yom HaAtzma'ut. So I decided to put my Shi'ur on Kiddushim on hold. I may complete it later this week, and then next week we'll take a look, just glance backwards about Parashat Kiddushim, or I'll put that on hold for some other time, and we'll address a different topic next week. But either way, today's topic will be that of Eretz Yisrael, as I feel it is not only an honor to be able to learn it together about the sources, some of the sources of Eretz Yisrael in the Chumash and elsewhere, but in addition of what a privilege it is for us, as we know, to either live here or some of us may be visiting here. It is such a tremendous, tremendous opportunity, or privilege, I should say, is a chutz to really just to have Eretz Yisrael and to be able to reside here in Eretz Yisrael. I cannot think of a greater bracha. Okay, I just wrote at the top of my sheet, as you will see, that since tomorrow evening is Yom HaZikaron, tomorrow evening and Tuesday, I thought it would be nice to dedicate today's shiur to all of the Chayalim and to all others who have given their lives lema'an ha'am v'ha'aretz, so that we could have Medinat Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael today, and that we could actually be here learning Torah today. It is in their honor. Specifically, and I may have mentioned his name on one previous occasion here at the OU Center or in one of my shiurim on Zoom perhaps, I had a close friend in high school. His name was Avi Grogan. Avi Grogan, zichrono livracha, had determined early on that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put him on this planet. He really had it figured out. Most of us don't, I think, probably into my 60s, that I haven't quite figured it out yet. But joking aside, he had it all figured out. Why God put him here on this planet? And he had decided that he was determined to and was supposed to make Aliyah when the time came. Until then, his purpose in life was simply to fool around and to be a troublemaker. And he followed that to a T, and he mastered that with a capital M. And just to give you an example of that, we were in the same Gemara Shi'ur together in Yeshivas Brisk in Chicago, and he never participated. He just did not participate at all. I was in ninth grade. I think he was two grades above me in 11th grade, maybe 10th grade, but there was simply zero participation, and he spent most of the time sleeping in Shi'ur. He wasn't causing trouble in Shi'ur. He did that the rest of the day, but he slept. And that was basically his modus operandi, was to sleep. And then one day, towards the end of the year, he raised his hand. So our Rebbe, Rabbi Usher Krupnik, may he live and be well, stood up. He was an incredible, incredible Rebbe, and he really did know how to reach each student. He stood up, and he said, Shechiyanu v'kiyimanu v'giyanu lazman hazeh. Avi Grogan has a question. Avi, what's your question? And Avi Grogan answered, my question is, Rebbe, can I bring a bed in here? But that was it. He participated. Rabbi Krupnik looked at him and said, now that you participated, you don't have any reason to be concerned, for whatever reasons you have, to not participate any longer. We'd love more participation. He became a star of the Shi'ur, actually, for the rest of the year. He also knew that he was destined, as I mentioned, to make Aliyah and to serve in the army. And when he turned 18 or thereabouts, I don't remember the details because we're going back now to the late 1970s, early 1980s, he did indeed make Aliyah. He did enroll in the Tzava, and he became a Chovesh in the army. Basically, he dealt with first aid, and in those days, a war, of course, meant a real on-the-ground war. There was no other type of war at the time. And when the first Gulf War broke out, when the Lebanon War broke out in the early 1980s, he was in the States. And the order from the army was very simple. If you were called up and you were here, you were required to go. If you were outside of Eretz Yisrael, you were not required to come back. But the war broke out, and he had gone to the States to visit his mother. Excuse me, I'm a little bit emotional. and he basically said goodbye. He felt that this is why God put him on the planet, as I said. And so he came back. Another soldier was wounded on the front lines, and it was Avi's job, among others, of course, to rush over to that individual. And he went over to that individual to take care of him, to bandage his wounds. And while he was doing so, Avi was fatally shot. And so he never had a chance, to see his mother again. So I would like to dedicate today's shiur not just to all of the Chalalei Tzahal, but in particular to my dear friend, Avi Grokin, Alav HaShalom. Okay, as I mentioned at the outset, in honor of Yom HaTzma'ut, I thought today we would take a look at some of the sources, beginning with the Chumash, that discuss Eretz Yisrael, and then we will move on from there to some other beautiful sources as well. We will see how, upon a cursory reading, which is what usually most of us engage in, Eretz Yisrael comes across, like all topics, as something that we read. And yes, when it comes to Eretz Yisrael, the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, of course, there's so much more. But I just want to begin with a quick story, which is not from the Chumash, which is from Sefer Tehillim, and I may have told the story here as well, so I apologize if there's repetition. If you don't remember, then I have nothing to apologize for. I used to tell my elementary school students that I have a favorite pasuk in the Chumash, which we'll get to later today, and a favorite pasuk in the entire Tanakh. And my favorite pasuk in the entire Tanakh is this one that you see right here from Perek Tehillim, from Sefer Tehillim, Perek Kuf Chaf Hei, or 125. And the pasuk translates as follows, or reads and translates as follows. Yerushalayim Harim Savivla, it's a famous pasuk. More than one tune has been written to this pasuk. Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains, and it is a metaphor, V'Hashem Saviv La'amo, as God surrounds his people, Me'ata va'ad olam, for here and forevermore. So in my year after high school, when I was in Yeshivat Shalavim, which we talked about just a little bit before the year began, I and several of my friends had the opportunity one Shabbat afternoon in Yerushalayim to spend the afternoon Sudah Shlishit with Harav Moshe Hirschler, Zichrono Tzadik Livracha, who, among other things, was the editor-in-chief of the Encyclopedia Talmudit. But in addition to that, he also had been a visiting Rosh HaYeshiva in Skokie Yeshiva in Chicago. I had only met him peripherally because at the time I was still a student in Yeshiva Sprisk, pretty close to down the block from there. And then eventually I switched to Skokie, and I am, as many of you know, a musmach. I received my ordination from Skokie Yeshiva. But I had visited, and so I had known Rav Moshe Hirschler, and he would also come in the summers to offer courses in their master's program. And so I got to know him that way as I took a few of his courses as well. That was later on. But at the time, I went with a few of my friends to spend Shabbat afternoon with him. He lived, I believe, in Beit Vagan. And at one point, we're sitting at his table, and he took us out into his mirpeset. And I remember, we are 17 and 18-year-olds. So as impressionable as we were still only 17 and 18-year-olds. He took us out to his mirpeset, and we're overlooking Harei Yerushalayim. We're overlooking the mountains. And he looked at us and he said, Atem Roim, do you see? Yeah, we saw. We really weren't sure. At least I only want to speak for myself, I suppose, wasn't sure what he was getting at. And then he switched it to, because he saw no reaction. Like, okay, nice mountains. Oh, you see nice mountains everywhere. Okay, fine, beautiful. Atem Loraim, don't you see? In other words, aren't you understanding what I'm pointing to? Don't you get what I'm getting at? And honestly, we didn't. And then he quoted this pasuk. He reached out his arms to the mountains in front of him, in front of us, and he quoted with tears in his eyes, like the story right out of the Gemara, Yerushalayim harim saviv la, v'Hashem saviv la'amo me'ata v'yad olam. He stood there crying, and then he said to us, Achshav atem ro'im, now do you see? And boy, did we. And my life was changed since that time. Outside of a visit or two to the Kotel, my life was really changed at that moment. So that is why that pasuk became my favorite pasuk in all of Tanakh. Now let's go back to the Chumash, where we find the origins of the beauty of Eretz Yisrael being discussed. Of course, it is referred to many times over, beginning when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Abraham to come to the unknown, even un- Hashem did not even title it at the time for him to come to Eretz Kanaan. That's fine. But it is in Sefer Devarim that we find that the beauty of Eretz Yisrael in a literal sense and in a metaphorical sense is discussed. And so we're told as follows. Ki ha'aretz asher ata vashama l'rishta, the land that you are coming to inherit it, number one, lo ha'aretz Mitzrayim hi asher yatzatem misham. It is not like Eretz Mitzrayim that you have left there. Maybe this is a little bit of an advance warning. Be prepared. Life will be different. Okay? In what sense, though? There, asher tizra et zaracha, you could simply plant your seeds. Of course, you have to do some work. But then, v'hishkita v'raglecha kegan hayarak. You will be able to literally to water at your feet like a vegetable garden. One of the basic, there are several, but one of the basic understandings is because of the Nile and because of the Nile Delta and the water basically veering off in so many different directions, Eretz Mitzrayim still has very rich soil. Outside of basic planting, and yes, of course, this is somewhat of a metaphor because more work has to go into it than that. Outside of that, though, nature takes care of itself. There's very little, at least the way it's described here in the Torah, that an Egyptian or one living in Egypt, one residing there, has to do in order to maintain nature. That's going to come into play, if I remember to, a little bit later on in our shiur. However, the contrast. V'ha'aretz asher atem ovrim shama l'rishta, the land that you are coming to, that you are crossing over to inherit, it's different. Number one, topographically, it's different. Eretz harim uvka'ot. It has mountains. It has valleys. And not only that, limtar hashamayim tishtemayim. You will be able to drink water simply by the water falling from the sky. The contrast basically is water will fall like it does for all of us, and that is the only source of water that we have. Now think about it that way. On one hand, that's beautiful, directly drinking from out of the sky. But if you're dealing with hills, of course, the water rolls right down the hills, which is why such a big deal was made annually of the drawing of the water back up to the mountains, to Harei Yerushalayim, to which I referred before, to become known as the Simchat Beit HaShoeivah, this grand celebration, because the water flows downward. Hello, gravity. And so I think it's gravity. So the water has to be drawn back up again. So it's a tremendous bracha, but inherent in that bracha, I wouldn't call it a curse necessarily, but is the idea that here in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to have to work the soil. You're going to have to work the land. Things aren't just going to come to you. I'm going to come back to that. And then this is my favorite pasuk in all of Chumash. The other one was in Tanakh. This is Chumash. Eretz asher Hashem Elokecha doresh ota, it is a land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu seeks after. Tamid Einei Hashem Elokecha ba, God's eyes are always upon it. Mereshit Hashana ve'ad acharit Shana, from the beginning until the end of the year. Simply put, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always watching over Eretz Yisrael and, of course, all of its inhabitants by definition. Now, does that mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching over the entire world that he created? Of course it doesn't. Does it mean that God has a special eye or a special place in his heart, as it were? All of this, of course, are euphemisms. It absolutely does mean that. There's no question about that because this is not stated about any other place. That's the first source I wanted to just briefly review with you this morning. But again, keep in mind this contrast between Mitzrayim and Eretz Yisrael, which will come into play in the next series of psukim. Elsewhere in the Chumash, a little bit earlier on than what we had just previously quoted, in Perek Chet, it is in Parashat Ekev, we find a series of psukim, a small parashiyah or unit, in which the word Eretz is mentioned 7 times. But there's so much more to that. And I inadvertently did not bold for you a few terms. But before we even go any further, let's just take a look. Rav Elchanan Samet, I'm going to ask you to take a look at the text in just a moment, and then we will, or a few key words, and then we will come back to the entire passage as one unique passage. Rav Elchanan Samet of Yeshivat HaRetzion, who basically just takes the Chumash and just two dimensions that nobody has done before, noticing all sorts of of literary patterns that have really not been paid attention to in the past. Chazal paid attention to literary patterns as well. But he just comes up with some brilliant, brilliant, brilliant ways of looking at the text of the Torah itself. And it is he that brought to my attention that here we see a chiastic pattern, meaning A, B, C, B, A. And you'll see what I mean. So if you want to take out a pen, you can. You don't have to, but simply look at the first line, the first reference to the word Eretz. It says Eretz Tova, a good land. Jump down to the bottom, meaning 1 and 7. Look at the seventh line, Al Eretz Ha Tova. Go back to the second line, number 2. We're going to read it all as one unit in just a moment. But it is a land of Nachalimaim, of streams of water that emanate from the Bikah, the valley, Uvahar, and from the mountains. Now take a look at the second to last one, and I think you see where we're going here, which would be line 6. It is a land that Umehara, from its mountains you'll be able to dig copper. The same word. Line 3, which would be right number 3. Eretz Chita Usaora, a land of wheat and barley, vichule, etc. Now skip to the third from the end. Eretz Asher Lova Miskenu Tochal Ba Lechem, a land in which you will not lack any bread. Bread is made, of course, from wheat. So there's a chiastic pattern here. We have 1, 2, 3. We have Tova, we have Har, we have Chita, wheat. In the center, which we'll come back to, we have Eretz Shemen Udvash. And then the pattern follows itself backwards from 1, 2, 3 to 3, 2, 1. We have the Lechem, which parallels Chita. We have Umehara, which parallels Uvahar. We have Hatovah, which parallels Tovah in the very first Pasuk. It's fascinating.
And what are the parallels again?
Lines 1 and 7.
Yeah.
Tovah.
Tovah was mentioned.
Lines 1 and 7, Tovah. Lines 2 and 6, the second and second to last, Har. Lines 3 and 5, meaning the third and the third to last, Chita, wheat, and lechem, bread. Those are the parallels. If you wish to discuss that with me after the shiur, I'd be more than happy just to help you figure all of that out, okay? I'll be happy to stick around for a few minutes afterwards. Yes, we're going to go back to the entire passage and look at it as one whole passage. So let's take a look. And we'll see that there's so much more to it than that. Ki Hashem Elokecha Meviyacha El Eretz Tova. For Hashem, your God, is bringing you to a good land. Eretz Nachalimayim is a land of streams of water, Ayanot Utuhomot, well springs and depths such as wells or whatever other sources that it may be referring to, Yotzeim Babika Uvahar, that are emanating from, that come out from the valleys and come out of the mountains. That's fine. Eretz Chita Usaora, a famous pasuk, of course, because it refers to what are termed the Shivat HaMinim, the seven species. It is a land of wheat and barley, Vegefen Uteina Virimon, and also vines, meaning, of course, a reference to grapes and figs and pomegranates. Eretz is a Shemen Udvash. It is a land of oil-producing olives. It does not say olive oil here. That would be Shemen Zayit, but oil-producing olives, Udvash, and honey. Parenthetically, but it is, I think, significant to note that Dvash here does not refer to bees honey. These are all referring to, I suppose, ready-made natural products. It's referring to what we call today the Arabic term Silan. Exactly right. It is date honey. And since we have made Aliyah, I actually use Silan just about every single day. A little bit in cottage cheese and Gvinat Kotej, as I like to call it, as Israelis do, and a little bit of cinnamon. It is simply outstanding. But in any event, here it is referring to Tivash Chimarim. It is referring to date honey.
How do you spell Silan beverage?
Say it again.
How do you spell Silan beverage?
Samech Yud Lamed Nun. Or Samech Yud Lamed Aleph Nun, I believe. You have a choice because it's from the Arabic. Okay. Then we're told as follows. Eretz Asher Lo, so you were asking about the word Miskenut. Eretz Asher Lo Vim Miskenut Tolcha Ba Lechem. You'll be able to eat bread without any lack. Miskenut means a lack. You will not be lacking it. You will not be lacking bread. Lo Techsar Kolba. You will not be lacking anything in Eretz Yisrael. Now, again, remember that this is obviously to some extent figurative. There are plenty of days when we all feel like we're lacking something. That is true. There could be a shortage of eggs on the cusp of Chag HaPesach, as there was, I think, a year or two ago, not this year. So it doesn't mean literally you will never lack anything, but it's obviously a global picture that's important here. Furthermore,
Eretz, there is no dull moment in Eretz Israel.
That is very true. There is...
And they put it into this pasuk.
That is very true. There is no dull moment. That is very true. Okay, and the pasuk goes on to tell us as follows: Eretz Asher Avaneha Varzel, a land whose stones are indeed barzel, are iron. I guess that could mean rich in iron. Umeha Rareha, there is that word har again. From its harim, you will be able to dig. I'm going to use the word copper because that's the usual translation. Probably doesn't refer to copper. But in any event, then we come to a famous pasuk, one that we recited our Birkat HaMazon. Va'achalta b'savata, you will eat and you will be satisfied, you will be sated. Uveirachta et Hashem Elokecha, and you will bless the Lord your God. Al ha'aretz hatava asher natan lach, on this good land that he has given you. First of all, outside of the simple reading, which in of itself is so beautiful, but so succinctly, so many different dimensions to the whole of Eretz Yisrael, it is important to keep in mind that the word Eretz here appears 7 times. 7, of course, will harken back, I think, for all of us, to many sevens, but of course to the first 7 of the Shivat Yemei Bereishit. And if we think about it that way, then to me, what emerges is a recreation. The land had been there and had been designated by God long ago, going all the way back, according to the Torah text, of course, to Abraham and Sarah, and according to the Midrashim and Gemarot, etc., to different sources, going all the way back even to Adam HaRishon. So the land, of course, was physically there. But this, to me, is symbolizing a recreation. God created the entire world on a macro scale. He created animals, plant life, and humans, in the reverse order, of course, plant life, then animals, and then human beings to inhabit that land, to till the soil, to care for that land, and to see to its future, to its everlasting future. And then, on a micro scale, God, in a sense, recreated Eretz Yisrael for Am Yisrael. We have the 7 days, the Shivat Yemei Bereishit, and now we have the 7 references to Eretz Yisrael. It is as if, to me, the text is jumping out at us and saying, look what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created for Am Yisrael. But there's a significant difference here between the first references of Tova, Har, and Kita, and the second of Lechem, Har, and Tova in reverse order. I did mention that there's a chiastic pattern, but there's something else that is going on here. And this too was first brought to my attention by Rav Elchanan Samet in his work on Parashat HaShavua. This happens to be on Parashat Ekev. And essentially what he says is as follows. One must connect this passage to the first passage that we quoted today. Actually, this is the first of the two. I intentionally read them in reverse order. The first one that we read, the contrast between Eretz Yisrael and Mitzrayim plays itself out in greater detail according to Harav Elchanan Samet. How? Because basically what he says, and I summarize this for you, I hope, in a manner that you can understand, on your source sheet, and this should be on side 2. If your sheet matches mine, it looks like it does. And that is that, number one, Eretz Yisrael produces for us on 3 levels. Some is provided by God as a finished product. That's mine. That's the water. Okay. Some, as I wrote for you, partially provided by God, partially by man. For example, chita, wheat. We have to plant the wheat. In order to be able to use the wheat and to turn it into food, we have to do something with that wheat. We, for our animals, maybe they can eat wheat kernels whole. But for our purposes, usually, we have to at least grind it. Fine. Sa'ora, barley, that one needs to work in order to produce barley. Of course, the same thing is true with the other three, with gefen, te'en, av, rimon, with grapes, with figs, and with pomegranates. And then there are those that are even one step further, and they're produced, the item itself, the foodstuff itself, is produced by man from God's product. And that would be the shemen, the oil from the olives, and that would be the dvash, the silan, the date honey. In other words, while of course it is an inherent part of the date, and the oil is an inherent part of the olive, in order for us to have the oil as oil, not as oil in the date that we are eating, or in the olive that we are eating, and not just as silan, not just as syrup that is a part of the date, but as silan, as a product in of itself, we have to do all of the work for that. Mitzrayim didn't have that. And that really is where the contrast is that Rav Elchanan Tzamet points to. And basically what he comes up with is as follows. Eretz Mitzrayim, we know, is described in the Torah as a land of, I don't want to say filth, but certainly spiritual filth, of spiritual, spiritual filth, as about the bottom as you could possibly get, where not only did they worship other gods, not only was it a land of idolatry, so was virtually every single place in the world at that time, there was a difference in Mitzrayim. And this might actually be the key to why B'nai Yisrael had to descend specifically, beginning with Yosef being sold there, specifically to Mitzrayim. Yes, of course, this band came along and they were sold, and Yosef was sold and ended up in Mitzrayim. That's true. And the course of events played themselves out on one plane. But we all know, of course, that God is working behind the scenes on an entirely different plane. And that then intimates to us that God had specifically Egypt and no other place in mind. Why? Because according to Rav Elchanan Tzamet, Egypt is the epitome because it houses the Nile River, because it houses the Nilus, where no work needs to be done. And of course, it's a little bit of a stretch if we're taking it in the literal sense. It's not meant literally or 100% literally. But basically, your needs are provided by God. And God did that intentionally. If all of your needs are provided by God, then God doesn't need to be a part of your picture. You totally forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you're free to do whatever you wish with the rest of your day and with your beliefs. So it wouldn't be too far of a stretch then to say, no wonder they believed in so many different forms of gods. No wonder Egypt is known for the sun god and for so many eithers. It's no wonder that Paro could not only purport himself to be a god, but to be accepted as a god. And for his people to actually believe that human beings, that kings are gods. That didn't happen everywhere. It happened in a few locations. How did it happen there? Because God basically said, I have given you Egypt. I'm taking care of it for you. I'm leaving the picture. And so before too long, Egypt encapsulated this very notion of there's no godly involvement in this world. There is no God, or there are gods. But this idea or this notion of a one God, if you even ever heard about it, what outside of Yosef, what are you talking about? That's ludicrous to us living here in Eretz Mitzrayim. They were free to develop their own sense of what it meant for there to be a God and to completely and totally forget HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Eretz Yisrael that you are coming to, as we began with, Lo Eretz Mitzrayim hi, in our first quote, it's not like Eretz Yisrael. What did we say? If you look back at it again, Asher Tizra Etzaracha, in Mitzrayim you could simply plant and you're all set. But in Pasuk Yud Aleph, the second of the three psukim here, the land that you are coming to, it is an Eretz Harim Ufkaot, of mountains and of valleys. And yes, the rain falls, Limitara Shamayim Tishtemayim, but the rain also drains out of the land. You are going to have to work. So on one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is informing us that, yes, outside of the slavery piece of it, the most significant, of course, piece of their lives and their existence in Egypt, an Egyptian does not have to work in order to receive the bounty of nature. You should know there's a difference. In Eretz Yisrael, you will have to. You will have to do so. and you will have no choice in order to survive. Now let's take a look again at the Yeshivat HaMinim, at the seven species. Just take a look, for example, and we'll only use this one example, at the third line. Eretz Chita, the third reference to the word Eretz. It's a land of wheat. Wheat in of itself is not a finished product. As I mentioned, that's one of the examples of having a shituf, of having an involvement of both man and God. With God's involvement, it's simply wheat. With our involvement, it turns into the parallel one on the other side of the chiasm, meaning the third to the last, not the third. Eretz asher lova miskenut tochal ba lechem. Without any lacking, you'll be eating bread. But in order to turn it into bread, we need human beings' involvement. God does not grow bread. God grows the wheat. God grows the barley. God grows the grains. We are the ones that turn it into something that is edible. And so to me, what this order of the Yeshivat HaMinim, and as pointed out by Harav Samet, with this chiastic pattern, is indicating to us is, and if you take a look at it again more closely, which we're not going to have time to do today, is that the first three, meaning A, B, C, are what God provides for us. But then C, B, A, the last three are our taking what God provides for us and turning it into something that we can use. That is the contrast, I believe, that is referred to in the other source, that Eretz Yisrael is not like Eretz Canaan. It is a land where we will have to work, and it is not going to be easy, as we all know, to live in Eretz Yisrael, especially those of us who came from what is medically referred to as the land of silk and money to the land of milk and honey. It can be, and for the average individual, it is much more difficult to live here. It should be no wonder, for those of us that have experienced living here or even visiting here, why, unfortunately, the flip side is that so many have made what we will call Yirida Ayuradim to live in the United States and to live elsewhere. Because by and large, life is much easier in so many, not all, but in so many other different locations. In Eretz Yisrael, you really, really, really have to work hard on a daily level simply to be able to survive. And you know what the plus side is? The plus side is we don't forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Living the way we live here gives us the opportunity to remind ourselves, to just automatically be reminded on a daily basis that God is here. Beginning with the fact that God has chosen this land for us, ending in a sense, I'm only saying ending in terms of bookends because now I'm referring back to Sefer Tehillim, which is outside of the Chumash, of course, of Yerushalayim Harim Savivla. But in the middle, we have this beautiful paragraph describing for us that Eretz Yisrael is the land asher Hashem Elokecha doresh ota tamid in Hashem Elokecha ba me'rishit hashana ve'ad acharit shana, that God is looking after it all year long. Not only is there no other place in Tanakh that is referred to with these words, with such a beautiful metaphor, I would imagine that every single one of us feel this, and we feel it every single day. And there really is something that is unique and something that is special about Eretz Yisrael. Comments, questions?
I came from somebody arrived, I find the poppies.
Now, to be fair, that, of course, does depend where in the U.S. as well. Because where you lived and where I lived in Fairlaw, or I lived in Fairlaw, New Jersey, just a hop, skip, and a jump from Manhattan, what you're describing about here is also true in Manhattan.
Yes.
And to be fair, what you're describing, the contrast between having having two cars, my wife and I had a two-car plus garage, And the contrast to Eretz Yisrael, where it's difficult to find a parking space, which leads you to say, thank you, Hashem, yes, which is our main point so far this morning. At the same time, we all know that I don't know that there's any gray area here in Eretz Yisrael. You have Israelis that are the sweetest people on the planet. You'll never meet anybody sweeter. And of course, I'm generalizing. And then you have Israelis that are, please forgive me for anybody who may be listening at a later date, who are simply the most rude people you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And I think we do have New York beaten in that area as well. Israelis can be ruder than any American you will ever meet. That's fine. but it's also a statement to our survival. There's a reason why Israelis are referred to as sabras, because in order to survive here, you really, really do need a hard outer shell. And sometimes it manifests itself in the not most pleasant manner, but it's there for a reason too. And it is a reminder of the fact that indeed one does have to work hard, and that brings us to being grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm sorry, go ahead,
yeah,
Ethel.
Just one quick thing when I came here.
I love that. I love that, the idea that Eretz Chalav, Zabat Chalav Udvash, and also
what
here,
she,
Eretz
she,
Zay,
what she said?
The idea, I'm repeating it, the idea that Eretz Yisrael is described in the Torah as, not that we quoted, but Eretz Zabat Chalav Udvash, a land flowing with milk and honey, and it's obviously this meant to be a metaphor. You don't see milk flowing here. On the contrary, sometimes we have a shortage of milk. And also Eretz Zayt Shemen Udvash, the middle of this chiastic pattern that we have. Eretz Yisrael is referred to in terms of its nature. And in terms of our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through nature, very much so. That is simply beautiful. I love that. If I'm repeating what some of you are saying, as most of you know, it's because the audio, at least today, instead of our being in the main room, will not necessarily pick up what any of you are saying even so close. I'm just going to repeat that, is that you mentioned you have the sweetness, and then you also have the, I'm using the word fiber. What word did you use?
Sustenance.
Sustenance. The same basic idea, right, is that some of these Shivat HaMinim are about sustenance, and some of them are about the sweetness and the beauty of everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides, both in a literal sense and a metaphorical sense. So thank you. That's really, really a beautiful idea. Okay.
What's the word sustenance mean?
Sustenance basically means sivia, visavata, sustaining ourselves, being able to live, to being able to survive.
Chiton Sora is more sustenance?
Yes. Okay. But it comes at a cost. Or, not just at a cost, it comes with a warning. And that is that not only is Eretz Yisrael a land that we could look at it as a land that we have to work hard for in order to maintain it, in order to see into the future, we could also look at it as the way that we presented it as well, which is that it is a tremendous bracha, it's a tremendous blessing, not only to have it, but to be able to work hard at simply living here and sustaining Eretz Yisrael. But it comes with, I said cost, that's really the wrong word. It comes with a warning. There's more to our involvement, and we all know the more to our involvement. And that is, Ethel, what you were getting at before, is that our spiritual involvement as well. We cannot maintain, we as human beings cannot sustain Eretz Yisrael just by our physical involvement here. Or putting it another way, let's think back to when HaKadosh Baruch Hu bade Abraham and Sarah to come to Eretz Yisrael the first time. You are to go to a land, Asher Ar'eka, and there I'll make you a great nation. All of these promises. But there were two steps. The first step was simply arriving, being here in Eretz Yisrael. If that were enough, then Abraham Avinu would not have been presented with his challenges. Then why did Hashem have him come here at a time when there was a famine that God knew about, but he didn't bother to say, "Oh, Abe, I just want you to know there's a famine there, so it's going to be difficult." Here, Abraham is coming to a land where he believed that the one God that he recognized is telling him to go to, and things are going to be awesome. They're going to be so magnificent beyond belief. And he gets here and sees there's a, why didn't God tell him? How rude. Well, God knew exactly what he was doing. He wanted Abraham Avinu to discover for himself that it's not easy here. And that sometimes you need to leave. In order to be able then to be ready to return and to work the land. And on an even deeper spiritual level, on the heels of all of these are what are referred to, not on the heels, excuse me, but the ultimate of what are referred to as the Asara Nisyonot, the 10 tests with which Abraham was tested. What is the ultimate one? Some say this was number 11, not really part of the 10. Of course, Akedat Yitzchak. What was that all about? To me, obviously, it has many different dimensions to it, but for today's purposes, the topic of our shiur, what that was all about, is simply to relate to us that while Eretz Yisrael is described with the physical beauty and the physical opportunities and privileges that we have here, we can not only not forget about the spirituality too, but the two, the Gashmiut and the Ruchaniut, they go hand in hand. Without the spirituality, then the physicality has no staying power. And I believe similarly, without the physicality and appreciating of it, then why are we here? Because we really can worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu elsewhere. We can worship HaKadosh Baruch Hu in New York City as well. But it's Eretz Yisrael that has this unique dual relationship between the physical and the spiritual. And I think that may be why HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Abraham go through all the tests that he had, and why the Torah describes Eretz Yisrael in the ways that we discussed until this point, and where we're turning to now for the next few, last few moments of our shiur. I'm sorry, Ethel, I think you're going to say something?
I was just going to say that the way he was...
So now we're coming to the spirituality, to the ruchaniyut. And it's something that we're all familiar with because we recite it every single day. At least we recite the second of these two sources. No, we're not going to go through all of the psukim inside simply because A, there's no need, and B, we don't have the time. But let's just take a look. In Dvarim Perek Chet, also, in Parashat Ekev, we are told as follows: Hishamir lecha, be careful. Pentishkachet Hashem Elokecha, you might forget God. Now think about that. In the context of everything we're discussing, it's not only be careful that you might forget all about God here in Eretz Yisrael. It's so much more than that. If we forget God here in Eretz Yisrael, then we might as well stay in Mitzrayim, because that is the land of forgetting all about God. Why did I bring you here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, if you forget all about me, if you forget all about me with a capital M, then you are, if not physically, then spiritually, you are descending and going down to Mitzrayim again, just like Yaakov Avinu was forced to do in order to see Yosef, to build up his family, to be able to eventually end up here. What are you doing? You're retracing your steps? You're going back to where you began? What's the matter with you? So, Pentishkachet Hashem Elokecha, because you may end up, I'm just paraphrasing here and translating, you may end up not observing the mitzvot that I've commanded you to do. Furthermore, Pasuk Yudbet, and again, it's Avi Herzog, that I'm tying this together with everything that we saw up until this point. Because you have to work, and you will be working, and building up the land. Because the Chalutzim, the first that came here with the first Aliyah, meaning the new Aliyah, in the late 1800s, and then again in the 1900s, and the entire kibbutz movement, and building up Eretz Yisrael, we run the risk of saying, look at what we did. So there's a risk involved. Pento chal v'savata. Let's say you eat, and you become sated, you become satisfied. Uvatim tovim tivnev v'yashavta. And you will build, and you'll have glorious homes, and you will dwell in those homes. And you'll have cattle, and you'll have sheep, and you'll have all of the money in the world. Which isn't really true here in Eretz Yisrael, but thanks to high tech, I think this pasuk now takes on a literal truth it never had before. And that is, v'chesef v'zahav yir belach, you'll also have gold and silver that didn't exist before. But in any event, and joking aside, v'ram levavecha, your heart will become haughty, v'shachachta et Hashem Elokecha, and you'll forget all about God, not just as the words indicate, hamotziacha me'eretz mitzrayim beit avadim, that redeemed you, that took you out of Egypt. But to me, again, that is emblematic of what we were talking about, of what we discussed up until this point today. You're going right back to where you came from. You're going back to a land, if you forget about God, going right back to this place and to an existence of where we don't even need to think about God. Because in Pasuk Tetvav, we're reminded, I'm the one that led you through this very frightening and dangerous desert where there were snakes and there were scorpions and there was Sima'on, there was thirst with no water, and I produced water for you, not once but twice, from Iraq. I'm the one that gave you the manna in the Midbar. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say here? Lema'an anotecha ulema'an nasotecha. You know, I did that. I did that in order to test you. I didn't have to do that. If you wanted water and you needed water, I could have figured out a way. I'm God. I could have figured out how to say, sure, here's some water. It's going to rain now. I didn't do that. Why did God do that? To test us. Just like, as we mentioned, tested the first, we'll call him the first Jew, there was no such thing as a Jew or a Yehudi then, the first Jew, Abraham Avinu, and his wife Sarah, and just like he tested them. They passed the test. It's our responsibility to pass the test as well when it comes to appreciating Eretz Yisrael, understanding what it is all about. And if we do so, then the last two words of that verse, Lehetivcha, that will be for your own good. And then in Patsuk Zayin, what if you end up saying to yourself, Kochi ve'otzem yadi, it is my own power, it is the strength of my hands that has given me all of the greatness that I have today. And so then we are warned, v'zacharta et Hashem Elokecha, you must remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Perek Yud Aleph, which eventually was written into our tefillah as what we call the second paragraph of Shema, so you'll recognize this paragraph, we find a similar idea, but it's taken one step further. And that is, V'haya im shamoa, if you listen, then, Pasuk Yedalit, then v'natati v'ta'aretz chemito, I will provide for you rain in its proper time. You'll read the first rain, Malkosh, the second rain, somewhat parenthetically, but beautiful. I personally never appreciated the concept of Yoreh U'Malkosh, first rain and last rain. Yes, it is true that farmers will, anywhere throughout the world, those that, of course, live on the land and whose whole being and survival is the land. But for most people, for most of us coming from America, rain was usually an annoyance, and that's all it was. And it could rain, it depends where you are, not in Arizona, where a good friend of mine lives, but on the East Coast for sure. Obviously, rain is not only usually an annoyance, but it can rain any time of the year. Not here. Here, there's a rainy season, right, which has now been all but completed, and we need the rain. And when we have the Oreh, the first rain, it is such a big deal. It's unbelievable how much your average Israeli basically makes a chag, a celebration, as just by having this Yoreh. And I remember an article that appeared in the newspapers, I think it was, I'm trying to think, we came in 2019, so this would have been in 2020, right around Sukkot time, right around that time, and it rained just a little bit in certain areas. In Yerushalayim, it rained for a few minutes, where I live in Givat Zev, very close to here, it rained also for maybe half an hour one day, and there were discussions. Is this scientifically, is this actually Yoreh? Is it not the official, actual Yoreh? Because maybe people were celebrating a little bit too early, and then indeed there was a little bit of a dry spell. It's a big, big, big deal here. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Exactly. When the rain comes down, Baruch Hashem. Absolutely. We need the rain. But having that rain is conditional. And in Pasuk Tet Vav, I will give you the grass, and the plant growth for your animals and also for yourselves. Va'achalta b'savata, words we saw quoted elsewhere as well, that appear elsewhere, that you'll be able to eat, able to be satisfied. But understand that's not a given. Because in Pasuk Tet Zayin, I recited these words this morning, I'm sure all of you will at least once today, and that is, Hishamaru lachem, be very careful. Perhaps your hearts will turn astray. You're going to worship other gods. And even if you aren't going to literally do so, well, in those days when this was written, there was that risk of literally doing so. Today, it could simply be nothing more, and that's bad enough, running the risk of simply, as it said, going astray and forgetting all about HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saying to yourself, I have no place in my life for God because I don't need God. Because I built up Eretz Yisrael. Because I paid for my beautiful home that I have in Givat Zev, which I did. I didn't build it. I didn't hire a builder. We are the second owners. But what do I need God for? But if that's the attitude you're having, then you're living the life of a Mitzri. You're not living the life of Avraham Avinu, of an Ivri, of what later became termed as a Yehudi or a Jew. And if that's the case, why would I, God, continue to provide for you as Am Yisrael, and even for individuals in Eretz Yisrael? I might as well provide for the Egyptians. What do I have to provide for you for? So understand that this is conditional. And then in Pasuk Yitzayin, if you do go down that path, then V'chara Av Hashem Bachem, God will become extremely angry with you. He will stop up the skies. There will be no rain. The ground will not give its yield. It will not produce for you. Worse, V'avatem Mehera, you will be wiped out of this land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. And if we ever ask ourselves, as I of course sometimes do, and sometimes I even do word it to myself this way, when we're told that, for example, the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed because of Avodah Zarah. So, okay, so we are warned by Nevi'im, or because of the big three, the cardinal sins, we're warned by Nevi'im. How did they know? That's not such a great question. According to our literature, right, our text, according to the Tanakh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, that's how they know. fine. But when we talk about things like the second Beit HaMikdash being destroyed because of Sinat Chinam, because of baseless hatred, etc., because we weren't getting along with each other, or Rabbi Akiva's students died, even though there was a general plague going on at the time, the real question isn't why did they die, it's why did they die too? Why did he lose 24,000 students? Why were they counted among the many, many more that perished in that particular plague? Where did Chazal come off? And aside from warnings from the Nevi'im, how is any human being able to have the audacity, even if you are one of the greatest, Chazal, have the audacity to come off and say, I know why God, stop right there, what are you talking about? Well, the answer is, it has its source right here. So it's not that far of a stretch. I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have certain demands of you. And we can never forget that my demands of you are not just mitzvot bein adam lamakom, they are equally the second one of the two Luchot HaBerit, the second of the two tablets, equally including Bein Adam LaChaveiro, and how we treat each other. And so it makes perfect sense for Chazal to come along and say, the first Beit HaMikdash was because of our deficiency when it came to how we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bein Adam LaMakom. Let's assume we learned our lesson. We didn't learn our lesson when it came to Bein Adam LaChaveiro. And that's why even the second Beit HaMikdash, to me, representing the second of the two luchot, had to be destroyed as well. We didn't have a choice because we never heeded this message of Peni te'levavchem lest your heart turn astray. And if it does, and you forget about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then he's going to wipe us off the face of this land. And if you do observe, and if you do keep, and do stay true to me, and you remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then finally what I bolded for you, the end of this paragraph, the second paragraph of Shema, Lema'an yirbu yimeichem v'yimei v'neichem al ha'adama, in order that you will be able to have long days on this land, asher nishba Hashem la'avotechem la'teit lahem, that God has promised to them, to give to them, kimei ha'shamayim ala aretz, for all eternity, just as the heavens and the skies are upon the earth, for all eternity. This is pretty much the end of our shiur. I just wanted to end with a beautiful midrash, which I have quoted here before, right here in the OU Center, but are there any other questions or comments? Okay. To show the appreciation that we all have and must have for the beautiful Eretz Yisrael and how blessed we are to be able to celebrate Yom HaAtzma'ut in just a couple of days and our return to modern day living, dwelling here in Eretz Yisrael, there's a beautiful midrash. And as I mentioned, I've quoted this to you before. I'll quote this time and time again. To me, it's worth constant repeating. Ma'aseh be'echad. There's a story that's told of an individual sheyatsa miYerushalayim lechutz la'aretz, that left Yerushalayim to go to the diaspora. Really, at the outset of this midrash, he is hoping to go, but he was stopped along the way. Now, whether he went to ask the question of the rabbis, I suppose, with the capital R of the time, or whether he was stopped because somebody heard that this guy had the audacity to leave, and so they said, we better prevent him, or let's go have a chat with this guy. What's he doing? Is he out of his mind? Either way, he came across these chachamim. And Amru lo chachamim, the chachamim said to him, sorry, but you can't. You can't. Now, what's missing here, and I think it's significant, is at least according to the way the Midrash is recorded, and it might not even be literally true. The entire Midrash might be apocryphal in order to make a point. I don't think it really matters if the story is true or not. What matters is the story is here, and it's here for a reason. And the way it's presented, with that piece missing, is also important, as we will see. They didn't bother to say to him, what is your reason? Tell us your story. What are you about? What is this all about? Why are you interested in doing so? Instead, they said to him, you can't. And here's why. Harei gazru she'en yotzim chutzal Yerushalayim. Those before us already decreed that it is forbidden to leave Yerushalayim to elsewhere. Now, obviously, for certain reasons, for business, for marriage, whatever it may be, to make a living, you can leave Yerushalayim. But in general terms, it is forbidden to even leave Yerushalayim to live, perhaps even visit, but certainly to live elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael. You don't have the right to leave Yerushalayim to go to Tel Aviv. You don't have the right to leave Yerushalayim and even to go to Be'er Sheva or Hebron Both places where Abraham Avinu lived. If you are in Yerushalayim, if you live there, you can't leave. And you want to go to Chutz La'aretz? Ulechutz La'aretz, to the diaspora outside of Eretz Yisrael, alachat kama v'chama. How much the more so? You can't go. We're really sorry, but you can't go. I'm not even sure they said we're sorry. You can't. Amar Lahem, he said to them, whoa, guys, with a capital G, Chachamim, so guys with a capital G. Hold on a sec. I understand where you're coming from. Okay, fine, I get that. No problem. But at least let me tell you what my specific situation is all about. Please understand what I want to do, what I want to accomplish. I don't want to leave. I don't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. I do want to be able to feel something, please excuse me, that I can't feel as long as I'm living here. And so he said back to them, you don't understand, you're missing my point. Nitkaneti bivnei chutz ha'aretz. I'm jealous of those who live, we'll call it the other side of the pond. I'm jealous of those who live in Chutz La'aretz. Why? Shehem mitgagi'im liYerushalayim. Because they yearn for Yerushalayim. They're there and they want to come here. They yearn to come here. They understand what it's like to want to be here. Va'ani lo ta'amti ta'am gagu'im. I've lived here all my life. I've taken it for granted. Isn't this beautiful?
Yeah.
It is so stunningly beautiful, gorgeous. I've never had the chance to feel this yearning. I apologize. I really am all worked up. Ella etzei ve'eda, please let me go. So ve'eda tam gaguim Yerushalayim. So that I can know what it means to want to return to Yerushalayim. He pleaded his case. They heard his case. And you betcha, they, of course, caved. Not only did they cave, they permitted him to go, but that too was conditional. What was the condition? And I'm also thirsty too, so I apologize. On the condition that he tells everybody that he runs across about the glory and the praise of Yerushalayim. Go, man, go. That, I think, is our responsibility. But not only is it our responsibility, for those of us that are in this room that chose to actually make Aliyah, that weren't born and raised here, or even just here for a visit, and perhaps, I don't know, but perhaps an Aliyah on the horizon at some other point in our lives, just as it is our responsibility to share with everybody the beauty of Eretz Yisrael and what a privilege it is to be here and to live here, equally important to me is just the very beauty and privilege of being able to be here and to live here. And I tell people time and time again, to me, the very fact that I wake up every single morning, I look out my window and I realize, wow, I'm here. That is the greatest gift that Kadosh Baruch Hu could possibly bestow upon us. How lucky we are, how fortunate we are, that we have the opportunity to be thankful to our Kadosh Baruch Hu for having Eretz Yisrael. Okay, this will conclude our shiur for today. May we all have a meaningful Yom HaZikaron, as we pay tribute to all of those that have given their lives Leman Ha'am V'Ha'aretz tonight and tomorrow. And then as we segue from Yom HaZikaron into Yom HaAtzma'ut, may we all realize not only the beauty of Eretz Yisrael, but also HaKadosh Baruch Hu's constant involvement in our lives here in Eretz Yisrael. And if we remember that, then indeed, as we began with this morning, Eretz Yisrael will be ours. May Atava Adolam for all eternity. Okay? Have a great day. Looking to you.